College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to attempt to do something that has maybe never happened before. Before we do that, I want to update you on a story. Now, we won't spend too much time on this because you guys have made it very clear that you don't care how the players get treated. Just play football. ESPN has found out that the NFL and the NFL Players Association quietly agreed to a confidentiality deal that hid the outcome of a collusion grievance, which this grievance was essentially filed by Lamar Jackson. Remember when Lamar Jackson was trying to get a new contract? He was trying to get a fully guaranteed contract, and no one seemed interested in Lamar Jackson. It all felt very weird that this had happened. Well, we know that this happened now. The NFL and the Players Association quietly agreed to this confidentiality deal that hid the outcome, which the league found, that the league urged owners to limit guaranteed money after the Deshaun Watson deal. And as you would imagine, the players are pissed about this. Now, again, I know you guys don't care. You just want to play football. You don't care. They already make enough money. I get it. So we don't got to spend too much time on it. But my goodness, this would be my question, Rob. And maybe this is like I'm ignorant in asking this. Why would the NFL Players Association, why would their representation work with the NFL on this? Like, isn't their responsibility to operate in the best interest of the players? I mean, the best interest of the NFL players is that they get guaranteed money. That's their best interest. Why is the NFL Players Association behind closed doors? Why are they working with the owners to essentially take money out of certain players' pockets? Why would they do this? How does this benefit the power of the Players Association? I get why the owners don't want to give the players guaranteed money. It keeps control. You can cut them, you can trade, you can do all of these things. Like, I get why the owners are not in favor of it. Why would the management for the players, why would they be against guaranteed contracts and agree to not tell their union? Why would they agree to do this?
It makes absolutely no sense to me. And I know fans don't care about, oh, how the money works, blah, blah, blah. I get it. But if I'm J.C. Treader, because I was trying to find his name, and I was the president of the NFLPA, he was the former center for the Browns.
He has to step down immediately.
What? He is no longer that person because he's not in football anymore. He's no longer the union.
Whoever the people are in charge of this can no longer be involved with the Players
Association. I have no idea why that guy would be anti-other players getting guaranteed contracts. It makes literally no sense to me. None. Like, I'm trying to find some story, any story that says, oh, here's why this person did this. Here's why this person. It makes no sense.
We can move on from this. I just wanted to share this with you guys. The NFL, so it has been found out that the NFL and the Players Association quietly agreed to keep a confidential agreement to not release to the players the outcome of a collusion grievance. The owners essentially came together to stop guaranteed contracts. I mean, we kind of knew this before. Like, it was one of those things, like, it wasn't hard to put two and two together, but it was always Lamar Jackson's free agency, and I put that in quotes. It felt weird when it happened. Wait, like, you're telling me this guy's available and no team is interested in him at quarterback? It just didn't really make a lot of sense. I guess now we have our answer. It's because everybody was working together to make sure that he didn't get this because it was going to be bad for the owners. It was going to be bad. If now you got to start fully guaranteeing quarterback deals and what that means, and we're talking about that's big time money. That's $300-something million guaranteed. The owners wanted no part of that, and the Players Association, they helped them in covering up this information. All right, I want to play this for you because I think we are the problem. I do. I think we're the problem. Let me explain. We don't think the officiating is good anywhere. I know you guys don't like the NFL officiating. Or maybe you do like the officiating, just everybody has a problem with the officiating for your team. But people seem generally unhappy with the way that the NFL is officiated. Some of you will not watch the NBA because of the way that the officiating works. Oh, they don't. You don't like it because of the officiating. I complain about targeting every single week in college football. I think the rule is bad. You pick the sport. We generally complain about the officiating. Well, this is a very interesting story. So Tim Kirchin was on PTI yesterday, and they asked him about the possibility of robot umpires. Listen to what Tim Kirchin said.
Well, the ones that I've talked to and others in the game feel like the players don't want the responsibility and the accountability of being in charge of a challenge on a ball or a strike, because they worry, do I know the strike zone well enough in order to be in charge of a challenge? And what if I challenge in the second inning and we lose a challenge? I had a major league manager tell me this year that in spring training, he thought the overriding point was that most players realized the umpires are better than they think. Meaning a hitter goes, there's no way that's a strike. And then they run the replay and it is a strike. That's my feeling, that a lot of the players look at it and not sure they're confident enough in their understanding of the strike zone to therefore be in charge of a challenge system. They want somebody else to do it for them, but the manager can't do that, and the manager shouldn't have to do that.
I looked this up today because I was genuinely curious. There was a study performed by Boston University where they looked at every pitch in a Major League Baseball game from 2008 to 2018. Now, I ask you this question, Rob. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I just want what your guess is. What percentage of balls and strikes do you think that the umpires get correct?
I don't think you're asking me if it's a low number. So I'm going
to
say
this was over a 10-year sample. From 2008 to 2018, they went back and they watched every pitch in a Major League Baseball game. What percentage do you think that umpires are right?
I'm going to say 85.
94% of the time.
Ooh.
94%. Now, some of them are just very obvious. They're obvious balls. They're obvious strikes. So I'm not going to make it seem like they get 94%. I firmly believe that we are chasing, as fans, a measure of perfection in the officiating that will never, ever be achieved. 94% is a pretty high number. That, yes, they miss calls. No one is arguing that. They miss calls. They get things wrong. This has been my stance from the beginning. When instant replay was first implemented, it was to change obvious mistakes, and you needed conclusive evidence to overturn it. We all watch sports. That's not how it works anymore. They change subjective calls all of the time. Sometimes a call is a pure 50-50. I know we want it to be very nice and neat in this black and white box where it's obvious this thing happened or this thing happened. We watch sports. Sometimes something can happen. It's a bang, bang, 50-50. And you're either going to agree with the call or disagree with the call. But I don't think that means that we need robot umpires to step in and take over. I think that for the most part, the sports that we watch are well officiated. My issue has just always been the consistency, especially when it comes to helmet and targeting. Wait, you told me that in this game, this was helmet to helmet, and this one it wasn't. It was targeting here, but it wasn't targeting there. That inconsistency frustrates me. Wait, why was this roughing the passer, but this wasn't roughing the passer? Call it fair, call it evenly across the board. Now, I know that we'll never get to that point where every call is going to be consistent, but I do think we have to acknowledge the same way that we know we are watching the best basketball players, the best baseball players, the best football players. We know that we are watching the best. We're also watching the best umpires. We're also watching the best officials. You don't get to this level without being really, really good at calling these things. Being really good at flow of the game, pace, and tempo. And you guys know my stance on instant replay. We would be better off, we'd be happier watching these games if they simply got rid of it. That, yes, they would get things wrong. They get things wrong now. How many times have we been watching something and an obvious mistake was made? We're like, well, you can't challenge that. Well, then what's the point of instant replay? Why do we have instant replay if we just all saw something? It was wrong. You're telling me we can't challenge that. But this other thing we now spent 4 minutes on, and I have no clue whether it was right or wrong. We all have a pretty good understanding of the NFL. Like, my understanding is not much different than yours. I just have more time to read about it than you do. I watch the same games that you watch. I have access to the same film that you do on NFL.com. We have the same information. How many times have you been sitting on the couch with your friend who is the same position as you? He thinks one's a catch. You don't think it's a catch. Or vice versa. That happens. That's sports. The main thing that I want is I want these things just, I want them expedited. I want it done a lot faster. I also think that we should have accountability. Everybody associated with the games has to answer questions, except the officials. J.J. McCollough has to answer questions. Bobby Witt Jr. has to answer questions. Chris Bubich has. Everybody has to answer questions about their part in the outcome of the game. How we set up a system in which the officials don't? Sometimes the biggest thing that happened in the game is a call by the official. We never hear them explain it. We never get that. No, that's what I would change. I want more transparency. Why can't we see the instant replay? I want to see why they made the call that they made. Hey, you called this in the second quarter. What did you see? Why did you call this? That's what I think we need more than anything. I don't think we need more robot umpires. I also don't think we need to expand instant replay. If anything, I think we need to pull back instant replay. I think the rules have just got so confusing and convoluted. And I think what happens a lot of times when we're watching games is the game's getting good. It's a good flow of the game. And now we got to stop it to watch this one play 50 times in super slow motion. That if you're telling me to look at something in super slow motion, you keep showing it to me over and over, I can convince myself that anything has happened. Say no to robot umps. I don't want anything to do with these robot umpires. All right, coming up on the other side, Rob, I got a toss-up for you. We'll go through it. Keep it right here. So Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margo Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to play this for you one more time in case you missed it. Tim Kurkjian was on PTI. He says that the players, you know what? They actually think the umpires are a little bit better than we give them credit.
Well, the ones that I've talked to and others in the game feel like the players don't want the responsibility and the accountability of being in charge of a challenge on a ball or a strike because they worry, do I know the strike zone well enough in order to be in charge of a challenge? And what if I challenge in the second inning and we lose a challenge? I had a major league manager tell me this year that in spring training, he thought the overriding point was that most players realized the umpires are better than they think. Meaning a hitter goes, there's no way that's a strike. And then they run the replay and it is a strike. That's my feeling, that a lot of the players look at it and not sure they're confident enough in their understanding of the strike zone to therefore be in charge of a challenge system. They want somebody else to do it for them, but the manager can't do that and the manager shouldn't have to do that.
I want to read this text really quickly and then we'll move on. CDOT, I want you to keep in mind that these leagues now have gambling partners, so judgment calls make it easier to affect the outcome. You and your gambling sponsors are part of the problem, but I bet you're not allowed to say that on the air. I don't know what kind of relationship you guys think I have with FanDuel. One day I just showed up and they were like, hey, read this and they'll pay you to read. And I was like, all right, cool. Sounds good to me. Sounds easy. I also use FanDuel. Yes, I think the gambling has a lot to do with the backlash of some of this, but what I will say to defend my gambling sponsor a little bit is some of you gamble on sports and then get mad when sports happening. Can't do that. You decided to wager on the outcome of a sporting event. None of us know. None of us know. I mean, it's fun to guess, and hey, man, it feels good when you get things right. But you also know that very rarely does the game go exactly how you think it's going to go. They call it gambling for a reason, not investing. Some of you were putting down these $10 parlays hoping to try to get rich here. You got a $10 parlay that's going to help you get rich. One call ends up not going your way, and now you're mad. That sounds like a you problem to me, not a FanDuel or DraftKings problem. It don't sound like that to me. You can't bet on sports and then be mad when sports happen. Sometimes the judgment call, the 50-50 call, that's just sports. And what I would guess, I don't think you guys want robot umps. I really don't think you want it. Because I think part of baseball is, the same way that you guys were very hesitant to put a clock on it, I think part of baseball is you get that call on the outside. You get that call right there that I would say is a 50-50 call. Rob, in the same way in basketball, a block and a charge. Some of you like that they call charges. I actually don't like that they call charges. I wish they just let you get dunked on more. But a block charge is a 50-50 call. It's based on so many different factors. I would just say that those calls are part of sports. Part of sports, and your team has to overcome them in some capacity. I'm not anti-instant replay. I'm not anti-correction. I am for correcting obvious mistakes. But what we have allowed instant replay and what we've allowed technology to do is to have us watch a basketball game where for 4 minutes we got to determine if a ball went off a guy's fingernail to go out of bounds. That's not what I think instant replay should be. It should be obvious when a guy's foot is on the line. Yeah, that's a two-pointer. Let's go play basketball. Or obvious when the ball hits the backboard first and now it's a goaltend. I'm all for those. That is not what we use instant replay for anymore. In the NFL, it was supposed to be to overturn obvious mistakes. Obvious mistakes. That's not what instant replay has turned out to. That's what I'm upset about. But the fact that humans help decide the outcome of a game, I don't have any problem with that.
I think people have always just disliked the idea that judgment calls affect games, and now gambling is their new boogeyman. For a while, it was the NFL is scripted. That was their boogeyman. Oh, my team lost because
they still say it's scripted, but no, I get your point, though.
But they, I mean, you're right. People still say
they
that, but
do. Now
they point the blame about the script at gambling. Well, you, that play had to go that direction because the odd.
100%.
In reality, you're right. Sometimes sports happens. I've been at games. You've been at games. Text line, we've all been at games. You're like, oh man, if that one call had gone different, the game probably goes different. Whether people were gambling on it or there was a script or not, that just happens in sports. It's not some sort of massive conspiracy, and it's not us not talking about it because we, you know, talk about FanDuel on the show. It's because it's a massive conspiracy and nonsensical to talk about.
Yeah, and it's just always, to me, we don't got to talk about this for the rest of the show, but it's just always like, I don't know. We then don't want them to call fouls at the end of the game. We want them to let it play. And then some people want the game to be called the same way with 30 seconds left as it is with 30 minutes left. We also accept that if you're at home, you get a more advantageous whistle. We also want them to let them play, but we don't want to let them get it too physical. It's like we haven't really determined how we want any sporting event to be played. So just we're going to disagree. We're going to argue. We're going to go back and forth. That's part of the fun of what sports are. So I want to play this for you, and we'll kind of talk about the toss-up here in a little bit. This soundbite made Rob angry. I like when Rob comes in with ideas, and there's some topics that Rob is very passionate about. There's some that he's kind of on the fence about. So next week we're doing MU Day, KU Day, and K-State Day. We've already started recording the KU interviews. I don't know why we haven't talked to anybody with Missouri, nobody with K-State. I'd have been talking to the tail back from the 1950. Rob's going all out for the KU day. Got no energy for the other 2 days, but that's fine. I like when Rob's excited. Rob came in all fired up to talk about this topic for whatever reason. Devontae Adams thinks that LeBron would have been a good football player.
What kind of football player do you think LeBron would have made?
He would have been one of the best receivers, tight ends all time. No question. I don't know if you ever seen him play football.
I saw him play a high school
game. Yeah, he can fly too. That's the thing. He's one of the fastest NBA players probably all time. I've never seen somebody cover space on a basketball court. Maybe John Wall, Derrick Rose, something like that. But he's up there with all.
Rob is upset at this. How ridiculous of a comment! Go ahead, Rob. I'll give you the floor. Tell the potential Hall of Fame wide receiver why he's wrong and why he can't scout and evaluate if one of the most athletic human beings that we've ever seen, why he'd be a bad football player. I'd love to hear.
I mean, are you going to trust his judgment? His last two quarterback decisions have been Derek Carr and Aaron Rodgers. So I'm just saying, maybe his scouting eye is not great. That's just my read on Devontae Adams. I'm not saying LeBron James couldn't play football. He probably would have played college football and maybe even made the league. He's a freak athlete. I'm not discounting his ability to do freak athlete things. We were saying he would have been an all-time great because we've seen video of him running past insurance salesmen and plumbers in Ohio. I mean,
well, everybody got to be a plumber. How many plumbers you think are out here?
Way more than you think. He's catching jump balls in the end zone at 6'8", 250 in high school over some kid who one day dreams of being a Delta Chi. Come on, what are we doing? There are really good tight ends in college football who don't sniff success in the NFL. And we think because we've seen video of LeBron stiff-arming a 15-year-old who has no future in sports that he's going to be an all-time great. Is he maybe a good football player? I don't know. All-time great? We're going to say that if LeBron had just changed career paths, me and you would be arguing, is it Kelsey, Gronk, or LeBron? Come on, stop this. He can be good, but not all-time great. It's okay. Just nonsense.
I think the argument would be, this is just what I'm guessing. I'm guessing the argument is we've seen a decent number of athletes who were good basketball players, how those skill sets have been able to translate. Antonio Gates is one of those people. Antonio Gates played college basketball. Was super athletic, very athletic. He then decided, you know what? I'm not good enough to play in the NBA. I think I'll play football. Think about how many times we've heard this story. Basketball player, really big, and just said, well, I'm going to go try. And they actually were kind of decent at it. I'm not saying that football is an easy thing to do. It's obviously not easy. But I'm guessing if you're 6'6", 225 pounds, and super athletic, I'm guessing that there is some saving you where you can do something on a football field. You can block or catch or run around, or we can figure out something for you to be able to do. I think that's what he's arguing. I think that's what he's saying. Hey, I saw how athletic this guy was for a 15, 20 year stretch. He's been insane. And at that level where he was playing high school football, I think it would have continued to translate. That's what he's saying. Obviously, we'll never know. I think LeBron made the right decision. He might be the greatest basketball player of all time. But I don't think it's crazy to think LeBron would have been great at football. Now, would he have been an all-pro tight end? I don't know about that. But he certainly could have been a good football player for sure.
I think he could have been a really good college player who – he could have been Noah Gray. Like, Noah Gray's probably one of the best 25 Duke football players in the history of the program. That's an indictment on the program. That's neither here nor there. Like, LeBron had gone to Ohio State and played football. I'm sure he would have been good. But to say he would have been an all-time great is where Devontae Adams losing me. Also, I know the touchdown's like, oh, you know, Jimmy Graham, Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, these guys that played basketball were great tight ends. Jody Fortson played basketball, and he was a scrub. He was a nothing in the league. So just because you're good at basketball does not mean it automatically translates to being, and I'm quoting here, an all-time great. That's where Devontae Adams loses me.
You got that off your chest? Mm-hmm. I know. I mean, I remember you came in here and you were mad about it.
Who do you think we have? Like,
so you still got more. It's fine. You got more. I'm just here with you. I'm
just saying.
I'm standing here with you.
There have been great college football tight ends who don't do anything. Kyle Pitts comes to mind. He was dominating in Florida. Can't do nothing in Atlanta.
Oh, that's
but
true.
But LeBron, who, hey, at St. Vincent St. Mary's, some kid who one day dreams of being on a highlight package with LeBron James is going to prove to me that he's just basically Antonio Gates if he had changed sports. No.
I will tell you this, though. There's some man out there right now that has been telling that I played against LeBron in high school story, been telling it for 20 years. Been telling it for 20 years. You sit and look at him like, Danny, bro, you've told me this story before. Please stop telling me this story. I've heard it before. Yeah, I know. He dunked on you.
Do you know who has that story? Remember that little short kid who Zion just humiliated on that from South yeah. Carolina on that? That kid is somewhere in South Carolina telling all his friends. I don't know if you've seen me on YouTube, but Zion did some terrible things to me on the court.
Or I would assume I would actually like the story. Another E60 idea. You remember LeBron's junior year, they didn't win the state championship. Where are those kids at now? I wanted you to hear the story about the time we beat LeBron when he was the greatest high school basketball player of all time. We have the documentary of what happened to the other kids from Friday Night Lights. Remember, the kids lose from Friday Night Lights. What happened to the team that won? We should get that story. What happened to that LeBron James team? That would be a great story to tell. All right, I want to ask you this toss-up question. Text line, you can participate as well, 913-586-7965, if your heart desires. Which of these veteran quarterbacks do you think has the most pressure on them heading into the season? Do you think it's Jared Goff, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, or Joe Burrow? Which of them do you think has the most pressure? I think it's Lamar for this reason. I think the perception around Lamar is that he doesn't play well in the postseason, even though he's actually played pretty well the last two postseasons. He played good enough in the Buffalo Bills game. Now, yes, they lost. He threw an interception early, and they're a bad interception. I thought he played pretty well in that game. He took him down the field. He got him in a position to score. He threw a good pass on the two-point conversion, and Mark Andrews just dropped it. Now, this part is sports, and I'm not making excuses for Lamar Jackson. Man, he's come really close the last 2 years. So the Mark Andrews dropped two-point conversion. The game is then tied. Who knows how it ends? A couple of years ago in the AFC Championship game. Now, maybe the Chiefs still win the game. But Zay Flowers is about to score a touchdown. He's about to score. He then fumbles. Possession then changes. You took points off the board for the home team. They end up losing a close game, and that's it. Now, again, that's how sports happens. Not making excuses for Lamar Jackson. It's not like he's super far off, but I think if you ask most fans, if you ask 100 fans, hey, do you think Lamar's a good postseason quarterback? I think 95 of them tell you no. 95 tell you he can't get it done. He's not good in January. I don't think that's the feeling for any of those other three quarterbacks. Certainly not the feeling for Burrow. Allen's been pretty good in the postseason, and Jared Goff has been fine. He's also taken a team to the Super Bowl. So if you're asking me who has the most pressure of anybody on them from this upcoming season, I think it's Lamar. I think it's he needs to play well and either get to and or win a Super Bowl.
So I'm going to echo a lot of your sentiments, because I think these are 1A and 1B. I think there are two correct answers. I'm going to say it's Josh Allen, but it's for all the things you said, just transfer the name Baltimore Ravens to Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen has been in the AFC title game twice. He's had a chance to beat Patrick Mahomes at home. He's been an MVP. He's been on the doorstep but can't break through to get past Mahomes. And that is the overarching story of Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson's career. Really good in the regular season and can't quite get past Mahomes in the postseason. I think one of them, and I feel like we do this segment every year, and every year one of them falls short to Mahomes. That's just the way it's been working. But until one of them get over that Mahomes hump and get into the Super Bowl, they don't even have to win it. Get into the Super Bowl, they are going to be the one carrying the most pressure. Joe Burrow has pressure, don't get me wrong, but Joe Burrow has already conquered that Mahomes mountain. I still think that because of that, he gets a level of, oh, we know he can. Jared Goff, I think, is feeling a little bit of the pressure, but the NFC is so wide open that can I see Detroit in the Super Bowl? Yeah. Do I think they will be? No. But I think every year until a quarterback not named Patrick Mahomes is representing the AFC and the Super Bowl, Lamar and Josh Allen will carry the most pressure into the ensuing season.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I do think it's a little bit different. Like someone says, whoa, CDOT, Josh Allen has the same pressure. I think the pressure is a little bit different. Like, I think it's a little bit different. I think for this reason, there is no quarterback in the NFL who has been patted on the back more for their team losing than Josh Allen.
I think that's starting to stop, though. I think is stopping is a better way to say that.
I don't disagree with you, but I'm saying is that almost beating Patrick Mahomes in the AFC divisional round, that held Josh Allen for 3 years. I mean, what can you do in this? Yeah, that held them for that. Lamar does not get that. Lamar, even with last year, people are saying Lamar can't win the big games. Mark Andrews dropped the two-point conversion right there. Lamar took them down the field against Buffalo. They then call the right play, Mark Andrews wide open. We're going to overtime. That's a big-time drive of Lamar Jackson's NFL career. That is his defining achieving moment. His future Baltimore Ravens Hall of Fame tight end drops the ball. We don't put our arms around Lamar the way we did it with Josh Allen after losing that game at Arrowhead. I'm saying we don't do that nearly as much. So, yeah, I think the pressure on both of them is drastically different between Lamar and Josh Allen. I think Lamar has more pressure on him going into it. I agree with you. For the most part, they are both in the same boat. Mahomes has broken through. He's had all the success in the world. You guys have had all the individual success in the world. Both of them have done just about everything individually that you can do as an NFL player except win the championship.
I also think we hold, and maybe I'm just, you know, justifying the what you're saying about tapping Josh Allen on the head but holding Lamar to a higher standard. I think there's a part of the age thing, too. Josh Allen is younger than, like, was a draft class after Patrick Mahomes. So we, even though they're in the same era, I think there's a level of, oh, well, by the time he took over, Mahomes already a thing, so it's harder. Lamar Jackson was in the NFL, and I believe he was in the playoffs before Mahomes was a starter. Or maybe it was that weird Flacco half-year Lamar year. But I wonder if the fact that Lamar was the first one through changes how we view each three of them, because it is Mahomes' era, but I think there's like different levels to that conversation.
Yeah, and I'm with you, and I would say that's just another one of those things that just like kind of perception becomes reality. Lamar Jackson is younger than Josh Allen.
I guess draft class, yeah.
But I'm, you know what I mean? Like, so like, they're both kind of the same here. Like Josh Allen will be 30 years old next year. So he's 29 right now. He'll be 30 years old next year. Lamar will be 29 in January. So he's a little bit behind him. Not a drastic difference. Like both of these guys, for the most part, they don't have a whole lot of prime left. Not with the way that both of them play. I've thought this from the very beginning. Like Josh Allen has a lot of Cam Newton energy. Cam Newton was never going to be a great player at 35 years old. Not with that play style. Not with being a short yardage, bigger running back. Josh Allen probably has three great seasons left. Lamar probably has three great seasons left. Man, you don't get 10 chances to win a championship. Not if you're those kinds of players. And if now you're trying to make Lamar Jackson a true pocket passer or Josh Allen, and you're taking away some of the thing that makes them elite high-end players, I think you are losing what makes them special. So I just don't think that Buffalo has another decade of chances. Mahomes can probably play until he's 40. His game will change. He maybe won't take off the way that he does right now, but Mahomes is a good enough pocket passer. Man, part of Josh Allen's game is being a short yardage runner for them. Lamar, we've never seen a quarterback like Lamar Jackson play at 35 years old. Not with his style, not with everything that he does. So how they age is going to be a big talking point here coming up in the next 2 to 3 seasons or so. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
For the first time in a long time, I'm living a dream that this can be a special season for the Missouri Tigers.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I have a couple random thoughts I'd like to share with you guys. The first random thought I'd like to share with you guys is, I miss Last Chance U. I didn't know I needed Last Chance U until we got Last Chance U. For those of you that remember the Netflix show, oh my goodness, it was so good. You would take this random trip to this town in Mississippi that you had never heard of before and have no interest in going. And you were fully invested in the lives of these kids that you had no clue. You learned about their home life. You met their parents. You followed the season. I mean, you could have just Googled it. You could have just got all the answers just right there off Google. Hey, this is how their season ended. You couldn't do that. You even met their financial person, their tutors. It was great. Oh, my goodness. I missed Last Chance U. Remember when they tried to, like, they kept doing it for football. Then the coach was too nice. Like, I know it sounds bad. I don't want the coach to be nice to the players. That's just not a good television show. I want the coach to be like, I don't think I'd play for that guy. Like the last season, the guy, he was like really trying to help him. That's not what I wanted the show to be. I wanted the players to actually hate the coach. That's when it was interesting.
Also, the basketball one stunk.
I didn't mind the basketball one. It just didn't have the same magic.
Maybe it's like this is me, like the sports nerd me showing. I just know that JUCO basketball is not really a thing. Like, it's different in JUCO football. There's like a pathway to go to a high division one. Like, people recruit JUCO football players at a high level. Like, when was the last time you heard of a JUCO basketball player getting a lot of buzz to go Auburn or Kansas? Yeah, it's not the same.
It's just not really a thing. No, you're right. And that's a big part of it. Yeah, no, I mean, a couple of the guys were on Last Chance U have gone on to the NFL and actually had decent careers. And I guess to your point, though, it's a thing to be at a D1 as a football player. You go down to JUCO for a year and then you come back. It's not really a basketball thing. Like, whenever you find out where a guy is, he ain't at Independence Community College. No, that's not where he is. But no, I did miss it. Someone said Jason Brown made that indie season so much fun. No, 100%. That's what I'm saying. Last Chance U was good when the coaches and the players didn't really get along with each other. That's when it was good. When they were getting along, I don't want to watch this show.
I mean, also when the coaches and other coach hate each other, like when it was the people in Scuba, the OC and head coach didn't get along. And then Jason Brown hated that. What was it? Fort Scott? He hated that
Garden
coach.
City. That's Garden what it was. City. Garden it was City.
Oh, he hated that guy.
I'm being serious. That's one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen in my life. That episode where they didn't do any interviews and they just followed the two teams for the game. It's one of the best. You don't even got to watch the show. Like, don't even have to watch it. Just watch the one episode against Garden City. It is incredibly well done. I guess second thought that I had is, what do you think happened to Malik Henry? Remember him, the quarterback that was, I think he was at Florida State, mm-hmm. and then he ended up in JUCO, and then I think he went to Nevada for a little bit.
He definitely went to Nevada for a little bit.
I wonder what he's up to. I'd love to catch up with him today.
I think I was watching a Where Are They Now video. I think he plays in arena football now.
We got arena football? I mean, I'm not even trying to be funny. We got arena football?
That's right. That's my point. That's where I think he is. I think he's playing a league that you didn't know existed 4 seconds ago.
I mean, I remember arena football was a thing back in the 90s, 2000s. I didn't mm-hmm. know that they still had arena football right now. He played for the Iowa Barnstormers. He trying to be Kurt Warner?
I don't think those teams exist. I think it's even lesser quality.
Malik Henry needs to go on Love Island. That's what he needs to do. He needs to go on Love Island. That's what I would suggest. The other thing, I was randomly thinking this. So, like, I don't have any information. I randomly was thinking this. Can you imagine if I told you when the Chiefs traded for Kadarius Toney? He was 23 years old. Can you imagine if I told you he'd be out of the league by 25? Can you imagine that? You remember the hype? I'm not even saying you guys are wrong to feel that way about Kadarius Toney. Man, when they played that game against, it was Jacksonville. That's what it was. It was against Jacksonville. That was the best game he had with the Chiefs. If I told you, hey, he's only got like 15 more games left in the NFL, you would have told me that I was crazy. You honestly would have told me that I was crazy. And no, Kadarius Toney, out of the league. How many yards do you think Kadarius Toney had in Kansas City?
Well, you say no one would have guessed it. I remember people thought I was a moron, thinking that was a bad trade. And yet, we're not here to pat ourselves on the back.
But I still don't think – I don't think it was a bad trade.
Do not tell me about the punt return. I do not want to hear about the one punt return.
No, I don't think it was that. I just think they had a free third-round pick, and they just took a swing.
And they threw it away. They threw it away.
I don't know if they threw it away. I don't think they threw it away. I don't think they threw it away. And you and I agree on the – don't try to now paint it like I'm opposite of you.
I know.
You and I are the only two people that feel that way about the punt return, and I'm with you. But – I still don't think they made the wrong decision with Kadarius Toney. They had an extra third-round pick. They took a swing when they needed to. And, I mean, he helped them a bit in special teams. He had 340 yards for the Chiefs.
I just think, and I will always say this.
Isn't that crazy?
It's so small.
Just think about the amount of time we spent talking about Kadarius Toney. Imagine, like, what you thought he could be. He had 340 yards. He had 760 yards in 4 years in the NFL. Hell, half of those came on two games in his NFL career.
I mean,
crazy.
We're going to always disagree on this, and that's fine. I think you could have found a play. You could find a player in the third round to give you 300 career yards. You could. I mean, you can absolutely. What has Sky Moore given you in 3 years? Probably 280? The exact same, except for you get a fourth year of value out of him. Like, you can find a nothing burger in the third round, which is what Kadarius Toney was. So I view it as a bad trade because they threw a third-round pick away for, you said, 300 yards? That's not good. It's not good.
Someone on the text line says, Nate Taylor is leaving. I will read you. This actually just happened. He released a quick announcement. Quote, today is my last day with The Athletic. The past 7 years as the company's first Chiefs beat writer have been the most fulfilling part of my career. Being part of The Athletic's rise and having my name and work synonymous with the company was truly special. An enormous thank you to everyone who has followed my coverage for the Chiefs. My belief is that journalists often don't get the opportunity to say thank you enough to the people they aim to inform. I am incredibly grateful that subscribers have respected, valued, and appreciated the service I have provided. Especially, he then goes on to thank his family and all these other people that obviously deserve to be thanked, but I don't think you want me to read the entire thing. I just will say it's not really my announcement to make. Nate's not going very far. Maybe that's the best way to put it. So if you're worried about where Nate is going, Nate is not going very far. Just because he won't be with The Athletic doesn't mean that he still won't be covering the Chiefs. So
you think there's a second announcement tweet coming one day?
I think there's a second announcement tweet coming very quickly that he is just taking another job doing virtually the same thing. Is what I guess. I've not talked to Nate. I'm just simply putting two and two together. One job is open. He is now leaving that job. Maybe, just maybe, there's some overlap. Maybe, just possibly. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.